Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Everybody, hope you had a wonderful weekend or Sabbath. I just came back from the Golan Heights. It was a beautiful Sabbath. I heard the bombings in Syria. It was a bit surreal thinking that I'm sitting at the table having coffee with good friends, being hosted by wonderful people in a wonderful, quiet community, and in the background, boom, boom. Sorry, I can't do those effects well, but you can feel the vibrations and you're knowing that perhaps people are dying over there. It is just surreal, and to feel the hand of God over you, the umbrella of love that Hashem God puts over the Jewish people to protect us from these people. But I'm going to be asking a question today because something has happened in this last week that does not bode well for Israel, and that is international forces being put on Israel's northern border where Israel meets Syria. What does this mean? This was actually a topic that was sent to me by one of our listeners, Shoshana. So Shoshana, thank you very much for the topic. We will cover it as you asked us to. We're going to be speaking about the repercussions of having the international community, UN forces, on Israel's border now with Russia. Is it good? Because maybe they can keep away Iranian troops. Or is it bad? Well, we're going to tell you what we think, and you're invited to call into the show as well if you want to weigh in on the issue. Go to our webpage at israelnewstalkradio.com. On the top of the page are our phone numbers. You can feel free to call in and also join us in the chat room. It's the orange button on our player. There's an orange button bar. Just click on that and sign in with your Facebook or Twitter or even as a guest anonymously. We'd love to hear you weigh in on the issue. All right, all that's coming up. By the way, if you want an INTR coffee mug so you can drink your coffee or tea while you're listening to Israel News Talk Radio, make a donation to our station, $20 or above. We're going to send you a cup. Go check it out. We'll be right back.
Always challenging the status quo. Hello, I'm Rod Bryant on Beyond the Matrix here at IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. I want to encourage you to listen each week, every Wednesday at the same time, for an amazing show that will challenge you, inform you, and inspire news, views, and wisdom for the nations. Here on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. Don't forget, Beyond the Matrix every week, Wednesday, here on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com.
Back here at the Tamar Yonah Show on Israel News Talk Radio. And I want to tell you all that before we start the show today and we talk about this most interesting topic, I just wanted to let you know about something that will help you enjoy the shows more and be able to also help support the station. And that is by getting one of our INTR, Israel News Talk Radio, coffee mugs. Drink coffee with me while I'm on the air or with our other great show hosts and wake up to Israel in the morning with your INTR Israel News Talk Radio coffee mug. It's on our website at IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. And just by going to our donations button, $20 or more of a donation, hopefully you'll support us by month as well, every month. There's different options for donating. We will send you an Israel News Talk Radio coffee mug, again, for $20 or more. It helps us be able to serve you, and you'll be able to drink coffee with me when I'm on the air as well. So it's a lot of fun. It helps support the station. Go to our donate button, $20 or more. Make sure that you send us your exact address so we can send you out that coffee mug. All right. We're going to be talking now about international forces on Israel's northern border. What does this mean for Israel? This is, some people might say it's a good thing because Russia is there and they want the UN, the United Nations peacekeeping forces, to be there to help them police the border so the Iranians don't get close to Israel's border. As Israel said, this is intolerable. We cannot take this. However, let's look more closely at this and take away the spin that I believe Russia is putting on here, and we'll find out why. We know that whenever the UN polices our borders, it means trouble for Israel. We'll go into that during the show. We have as our guest now Dr. and Rabbi Mordechai Ben Menachem. He is a researcher, former lecturer at Ben-Gurion University, and has authored over 60 books and 400 research papers on science, political science, and more. He is probably most known in the non-academic field for authoring the book Muslim Winter, as opposed to the Arab Spring. He served in Israel's War of Attrition and spent much time in Gaza, serving directly with, at that time, General Arik Sharon, who later became the Prime Minister of Israel. Dr. Mordechai Ben Menachem commentates on Mideast and world issues, and I want to welcome to the show Dr. Mordechai Ben Menachem.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's really good to have you on. All right, so the UN has now come to the northern border of Israel to police with Russia between Syria and Israel. What do you have to say about that?
Well, it's a lot more complicated than that. But let's take a step back for a moment and try to describe the overall situation of what's going on here. There's two intersecting triangles. One triangle is Israel, Russia, Iran. The second triangle, Israel, Iran, and Hamas. And you notice who I did not speak of, and I'll mention those in a second now. The Israel-Russia-Iran triangle is all three of those are actors, and also Russia is also acting as a mediator on that triangle. In the Israel-Iran-Hamas triangle, those are the three actors, but the mediator there is an outside actor, outside of the triangles, by the name of Egypt. And you notice I didn't mention the U.S., I didn't mention Saudis. They're all in there as well, but they're not the main actors here. They're residual actors. And then we have the non-actors, the ones who are dying to get in on the act and have no idea how to do it. So they, every now and again, they make squeaks and noises and mouse noises, and it's more or less the mouse that roared. And the mouse that roared, there are three of them: the U.N., the European Union, and China. They're mice. The United Nations, and on the best of circumstances, it's a mouse. It can make troubles. It can eat your corn. It can gnaw on your toes, but it really can't do anything. At the best of circumstances, they're impotent, and usually they're a lot less than that.
Well, I would say it's more sinister. We saw what happened when the United Nations was policing the northern border with Lebanon, and when we had the Hezbollah kidnap our soldiers. The United Nations helped the Hezbollah cover up evidence when they finally turned over a video they had of the crime, of the kidnapping. They edited out and they, how do you say, mitashtesh, like they blurred the faces or whatever of the perpetrators and then gave it to Israel. Why they were protecting terrorists? Why?
Well, because they're part of the whole milieu. And we're talking about who are these people? Who are the ones in these so-called forces? Remember, these are forces that cannot fight, are not meant to fight. They can't even protect themselves. They're in there in order to be some sort of observer force. And when things started to get hot in Syria, they all ran away. Where did they run to?
Israel.
They ran to Israel, of course, yes. Because they knew that nobody else would protect them.
We had to save their behinds.
Yeah, we do that again and again, because they're impotent jerks who are really incapable of doing anything constructive. You're right. What they did with in South Lebanon with the 1701, with the agreement that was done there by our minister at the time, Tzipi Livni, who's on the best of circumstances an idiot. The agreement was stupid. It was badly written. It was badly formulated, and it was not. And it was never even what was there was never implemented. So, you know, you had a bunch of people there from all sorts of countries that couldn't care less about what's going on here, and they were afraid of Hezbollah. Hezbollah said, you know, you either cooperate with us or we will take off your bags of tea.
That's an interesting way to put it. Okay, but wait a second. But still, the Hezbollah is a terrorist organization. The United Nations is supposed to be peacekeeping forces. That they can take sides is number one against what they're supposed to be doing. And number two, that they not only took sides, but they abetted the kidnappers. And when they didn't want to turn over the video to Israel, when they finally did, again, they edited it out. That's a crime.
You're absolutely correct. Everything you're saying is absolutely correct, factually correct. Your emotions are correct. I agree with everything that you're saying. And the point is that they're irrelevant idiots who are incapable of doing anything constructive except be frightened rabbits.
So what is the interest then? Why would the United Nations want to send their peacekeeping forces there? Because let me just read you this one little sentence here from, I'm reading from a...
You need to understand how the United Nations works. The United Nations is a fictitious organization. Other than the fact that it has a fantastic amount of money going through it and everything else, remember the largest bloc in the United Nations is the OIC, the Organization of Islamic Countries, which has 57 votes in the United Nations. It's the largest bloc. Basically, the United Nations has never functioned since it began. And so you have an organization there with an enormous budget. Most of it, a vast majority of it, funded by the United States, and all they can do is make trouble. The Islamic countries use it for their own purposes. Look at UNRWA. UNRWA is a terrorist organization. It's a part of Hamas today. 40,000 workers, employees of UNRWA are members of Hamas. 40,000 employees.
Where do you get those stats?
You can find them anywhere you want on the internet.
All right, you're going to have to show me that. I would be curious to see it because I'm sure it doesn't say these members are Hamas members, I would imagine. In any case, I want to say something else here. We went to the northern border with Lebanon and saw how the UN was not only impotent but abetted the Hezbollah terrorists there. I can take you back down now to the southern border where the UN peacekeepers were supposed to be in 1956 when Egypt waged war against Israel and we fought back and we gained the Sinai and the world went crazy because Israel had the Sinai. And so they twisted our arms and we gave it back to them at that time. In 1956, but they promised us that they would put UN troops there and the UN would guarantee that Egypt would not make it a military zone. They would not bring in their tanks and their weaponry to attack Israel. And that failed and brought us to the 1967 war, where again we took over the Sinai and had it until we gave it away again in the Camp David Peace Accords in 1979, I believe it was. Okay.
Again, you're factually correct. Everything you said is completely correct. The UN observers were there in Sharm el-Sheikh and in Tehran and in Snafir. Those are two islands off the coast of...
Thought. The music is on. We have to go to a break. We'll be right back. And if you'd like to weigh in on the issue, folks, feel free to call in. Our numbers are on our homepage at IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com.
Kia.
Hi everyone, this is Andrea Simintow from Jerusalem inviting you to drop everything and join me on my show, Pull Up a Chair. We'll visit this week's quirky stories, meet fabulous guests, and discover my Israel. Together we'll laugh, shout, and explain the topics that make us say, hey, we've got to talk about that. So get comfortable and pull up a chair with me, Andrea Simintov, every Thursday on Israel News Talk Radio.
Show on Israel News Talk Radio, and we are talking about the placing of foreign troops on Israel's northern border with Syria. I'm going to read you just a few lines here from referral.org, and they say here that the UN spokesman said on August 3rd that the force known that they're putting on the northern border there is known as UNDOF. It's implementing a, quote, gradual return to the area. And he says here the ultimate goal for UNDOF is full return, conditions permitting, he said. Full return they want. He added that a key goal for the peacekeepers is the reopening of the Kunetra crossing between the two countries. Our guest is Dr. and Rabbi Mordechai Ben Menachem. And I want to ask you, Dr. Mordechai Ben Menachem, why they're in Kunetra, and why do they want a full return? Just go over that again if you can, and then you can speak about what you were speaking about the last segment when I had to cut you off for the break.
Okay, look, first of all, we have to understand that what they want and what they say really doesn't matter to anyone, even to them. No one believes them. They don't believe themselves. So what their announcements are totally irrelevant. They don't matter to anybody. Certainly neither Netanyahu nor Putin could care less what they say. Now, so the real question is, and you asked this previously, earlier you asked, you know, why is this in anyone's interest? Why should anyone allow them in there? Why should we, why should Russia, why should Assad want them there? And that's a more complex question, but it's a fascinating one. We have to understand what's going on here. Israel has become a substantial regional power. Over the last few years, particularly over the last decade, Israel has become a world-level player in what's going on, which was not the case, for instance, in 1967. We were barely on anybody's radar scopes. Today, we're a power both diplomatically and militarily, and of course also economically. So how do you meld these three things together? Diplomacy, military strength, and economics. So you need measured, effective force. You don't need overwhelming force. So having these United Nations jerks there essentially gives us the ability to use our force more effectively. There are places where we don't need to use force, for instance, because they're there. And we can manipulate them. We can force them to do things because we know and they know, and they know that we know. They are completely dependent upon us for their survival.
So, are you putting a positive spin on this?
Absolutely.
Okay,
absolutely.
I want to counter you.
And I put it this way. I couldn't care less whether they're there or not. But if they're there, we're certainly going to take advantage of it.
Okay, so I want to counter this opinion, okay, and say that whenever we've had UN forces on our border, it's never bode well for Israel. If we have to defend ourselves, if we have an attack, let's say, from ISIS or from any place in Syria, and we have to respond, and a UN soldier is in the way, and he gets killed, or several of them do, while we're defending ourselves, this will turn into an international fiasco. It will perhaps put more pressure on Israel not to respond, and it will make us fight with our hands tied behind our backs even more than they are now. What do you have to say about that?
It's a valid comment, but it doesn't work that way. First of all, because things like that have happened in the past. If they got in the way, they died. And that happened. That happened in Kfar Kana, in southern Lebanon, during the time of Olmert and the so-called Second Lebanese War. It happens. And everybody knows that it can happen. That's why the people there are military people. So it doesn't tie our hands, it doesn't tie our jet planes, and it doesn't tie our missiles. If we need to do something, we do what we need to do, full stop. But we need to be
But then we have to go to war again, and we lose more soldiers again.
No.
And it costs us tons of money when we go to war.
That's where you and I differ here.
Okay. Now,
what's happening today is not, we don't jump to war. That's what Omer did, and he was a jerk. It was a silly thing to do. You used measured responses. And both and our three so-called chiefs today, that's Netanyahu, Lieberman, and Eisenkot, are experts at this. You use measured responses so that all the actors in the area see, perceive, and perception here is the critical issue, that Israel is using a very small portion of its forces, of its potential force. That's why I mentioned that we're talking about two triangles and not one, the Northern Triangle and the Southern Triangle. At any given point in time, we're using measured force to show people what we can do and what we're not doing yet. And that's the difference. And so we can leverage these UN jerks. They're useless, but they're useless as individuals, they're useless as a group, but we can take advantage of them being there to our own advantage if we look at things intelligently. So far, thank God, we've been looking at things very intelligently, and hopefully we'll continue to do so.
I hear what you're saying. It is I'm still not agreeing with it, but we're all entitled to our own opinions. If any of our listeners would like to weigh in on the issue, you can call in. Do you agree with Dr. Mordechai Ben-Menachem, or do you agree with little old me, who doesn't have a PhD and does not have all the research that he does? But I have skin in the game. I have experience here. You have experience here, too. I think you've been living in Israel longer than I have as well. But whatever.
Only 50 years.
That's my opinion. It's never been good when we had international forces on our border. I want to ask you very quickly, because we only have about 3 minutes left. Since you are a rabbi, the prophetical instance of this. How does this work out prophetically? We read in the Tanakh, in the Bible, about the nations of the world converging upon Israel and coming over against Jerusalem. Are we seeing this today?
Well, yes and no. I mean, we have to understand the context of when we look at prophets. If we look at Jeremiah, is that in English?
Yes.
If we look at Yirmiyahu, we can see that there's a very strong difference between the beginning and the middle of the book of Yirmiyahu. In the beginning, it talks about some things in the first chapter, and the words there that are used are very, very harsh, very, very strong. And today we believe that that's a prediction. Remember, Yirmiyahu was during the time of the first temple, and he was essentially predicting what was going to be happening with Rome. And so we saw that prediction exactly came true. I mean, he was predicting it half a millennia before it happened, and everything he said came true. I mean, almost word by word, it's amazing. But then if you turn to chapter 31, verses 30 through 33, you see that he's talking about a different time, with different results, and that's what we believe today is on the way to happening now. And we see that the results there, pardon me, are very different than what happened during the time of Rome.
All right, so what does it say there that may be happening today?
You want me to try to translate into English? Ooh, I've never done that. I don't have it in English.
Give us a background.
Okay, he says days are coming when a new agreement is made between God and Israel, and it differs from the agreement that was made between God and our forefathers. at the time of when we left Egypt, and we're going to see that a whole new kinds of things are going to occur to such an extent that the exodus from Egypt will pale in terms of its importance compared to what's going on in the new agreement.
And talk to us about, you know, what will be after that. I mean, this is the times of the Messiah, of the Mashiach.
Yes, it is.
Okay. Do you think it's happening? Do you believe it's happening now?
Oh, absolutely. I absolutely no doubt about it. If you read the how do you say the name? Tereasar.
The what?
Tereasar, the 12 small prophet books.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah.
Sorry, I don't.
The minor prophets. Go ahead.
I never do these things much in English, so I forget the terminology.
You know what? Okay, stop for a moment because we only have 60 seconds left. I want to get this in as soon as possible. They say that Damascus will be destroyed. What about that? What do you think about it?
Well, isn't that what we see? I mean, Damascus
is
a rubble.
We see Syria, but not Damascus.
Well, Damascus is a rubble heap, and not just Syria, but all of Syria, including Damascus. Most of Damascus is a rubble heap. And certainly Homs and almost every other city in Syria.
In Syria as a whole,
yes. They're the Stone Age.
All right. You know what? We're going to have to leave it right there. I hate to do it, but I have to go by the clock. Dr. Mordechai Ben-Menachem, thank you so much for coming on. We'll have you back on again. Maybe we can go in deeper on this topic. Thanks for being with us.
Okay. Thank you.
And when we get back, we're going to be having on Shifra Hoffman. You can feel free to call in and comment on anything that she's talking about as well. You're listening to IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. For tomorrow on the show, we'll be right back.
Israel News Talk Radio, straight talk from Israel.
Shalom from the heartland of Israel. This is David Ha'ivri. Join me every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Israel time, 10 o'clock Eastern, for A Hebrew in the Heartland on Israel News Talk Radio. Hear the news and views from the heartland of Israel every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Israel time. Be there.
Back here at the Tamar Yonah Show on Israel News Talk Radio. And it's now time for our Jewish activism segment with Shifra Hoffman. Shifra is the founder of victimsofarabterror.org, and she is the director of shuva.net. Welcome to the show, Shifra Hoffman.
Hi, Tamar, and hello to all the audience. I always try to begin with a word of gratitude, more than a word, there are no words, to thank the Almighty so much for giving us the land of Israel. And I hope that he will forgive us for doing everything he said not to do, so that we are able to remain here forever to serve him.
Amen. So you wanted to talk about
Hello?
Three different topics.
Yeah, I wanted to discuss the fact that why, for what earthly or unearthly reason does Israel feel it has to respond to every critic, especially if they're anti-Semitic? Take, for instance, Norway, who gave us the ill-fated Oslo Accord. When they sent an illegal ship here, after the first ship, the Maravi, that injured our soldiers, and our prime minister, our peace prime minister, paid them $20 million to continue good relations after we had our soldiers were injured, and because they said, if you don't pay us, we won't have good relations. Oh, how terrible. Good relations when they hate us, and they say so all the time. But I want to get back to the main point. Why do we have to answer every critic? Why can't we say this is a sovereign, a God-given sovereign country, our Israel. We have no claim to any other land. Don't tell us what to do with our policies. Don't tell us that we are not doing the correct what do they call it, political correct. I am so sick and tired of that. I want to see some strength behind here. And I think I was writing an article called "Have Met the Enemy and It Is Us." Because it's not the nations, it's we that allow them. We are enablers, allowing them to say and do these things when we're a sovereign country that God has given us the right to.
And Shifra, you know, maybe Netanyahu should learn from Trump and start answering these threats with, and belittling them, maybe. I'm just like, just putting this out, you know, Trump was talking about Little Rocket Man, belittling them, showing that their opinions are. What was it? The Rocket Man who said, "We have a button and we can use it anytime we want to." Basically, meaning like a nuclear button. And what was Trump's answer? "My button is bigger than your button." Was that the joke that was going around? Go ahead.
Well, of course, but it's good to talk tough. Look, you know, I think back when I was a young girl, a little girl almost. Harry Truman, who wasn't a great academic person, he was a tailor, or I forgot what kind of a profession he had. He wasn't, you know, very intellectual according to academia, but he had brains. And when they told him, "How could you throw the or drop the hydrogen bomb on Japan? How could you do that to so many people?" He said, "We are at war and they were killing our soldiers. My job as president is to win the war and save my American boys. God bless them, wherever heaven he's in."
So talking about the military, you also wanted to talk about the IDF.
Yes. We have a wonderful army. You know, you had your son serve in it, and maybe they're still serving in it. Mm-hmm. And we have wonderful, dedicated boys who believe in the God of Israel, the land of Israel, the people of Israel, and they train to lay down their lives to protect us. Why doesn't the government finish the job? Why don't they get rid of Hamas, who is daily sending firebombs and terrorists and stabbings and stonings and bombings? Why don't you use the army for what it was meant to be? Get rid of the enemy, E-N-E-M-Y, enemy, Hamas.
All right. I'm sure that the prime minister has his reasons why he believes not to start an all-out war, but I would tend to agree that when you see evil, you have to nip it in the bud. And that's why I tell our listeners to always pray that our leadership has the wisdom and the courage to do what needs to be done. And say,
Tamar, dear, yes. You know what? I know that you say things and they're right, and I try to, and we all do. Meanwhile, Bibi's record is very bad. He's very weak. Even his brother-in-law, Sarah's the brother, had come out against him because of that. But why, you're the prime minister, why don't you exercise your right? Why do you keep looking backwards to see what the world is saying? I thought he left that in the ghetto, Mayim Ruha Goyim. What will the world say? And I've said it before, that Ben-Gurion, even though he wasn't a religious Jew, he may have his place in the highest heavens when they told him after the Holocaust, don't say that you're going to declare a state. And he said, "I declare the state of Israel. Thank God we have it today." Have a little courage. Stop asking the world's opinion. The world will never agree to anything if you don't agree to it. In fact, one of my articles is called "Wisdom is Like Rain." It hits the highest peaks and goes down to the valley. I think that's why we're having a drought here.
Well, again, I say, pray that our leadership has the courage and the wisdom to do what is right and not have to bow down to the nations of the world and be afraid.
Right. Well, I pray too, but I don't hold out too much hope for them because his record, as I say, is not good. I want to address the third topic, which is Aliyah the answer to anti-Semitism? My dear friends, maybe I told this before, but it's worth retelling. Sid Luckman was a Jewish football hero. I don't know too much about sports, but I did hear about him. And he had an old father, maybe 85 years old, who never saw him play. So he said, "Dad, come please. I'll get you a seat right front in the bleachers and you'll see me play." The old man complied and he sat there in the bleachers watching. And he saw the opposite team go knock his son down, try to grab the ball. When he grabbed the ball, Sid, they knocked him down again and again and again and again. Finally, the old man got up and said, "Sid, enough. Let them have the ball." Why do I use that as an analogy? Because we see anti-Semitism increasing everywhere, even in America, where they said it could never happen. It's time, my dear Jews, to let them have the ball and come home to Israel. Today you don't have to ask, where will I go? You know that famous song, Be'ahinshalachgein, where will I go? The world is too small for me. Today we have our land of Israel, thank God, and it has everything and more waiting for you. Don't wait too long, because God, in his mercy, has his red lines as well.
This is absolutely true. We know that the future of the Jewish people is in Israel and not in Paris or London or Sydney or South America or even North America or Brooklyn, right, or Muncie or anywhere else. God bless everybody around the world. But the future of the Jewish people is in Israel.
And, you know, Tamar, I must add, Rabbi Kahan of blessed memory, the truest leader of the Jewish people in this and many generations, wrote long ago, it's incredible that the people so smart in academia and in economics and in everything that we contributed to the world so much, but so stupid for our own survival. Jews, listen to what we're saying. We mean for your good. We're not trying to tell you what to do. We're trying to tell you that if you don't do it, you may not have an option to do it again. Come home now while you can.
Amen. Schiffer Hoffman, where can people contact you if they want to be in touch with you?
Okay, it's Hoffman Schiffer. My name spelled opposite, HOFFMAN SHIFRA@gmail.com. And I want to thank the people who keep writing me. Say hello to Mr. Pfizer in Indiana. He told me he's coming soon. God bless you. And all the others. Come, come, come. You'll never regret it.
Amen, amen, amen. Thank you so much, Schiffer Hoffman, for coming on the show. God bless you. You feel good, feel better. Please, God, you should be strong to continue to serve Am Yisrael, the nation of Israel.
Thank you.
Thank you, Schiffer. All right. Well, we've come to the end of our show. I wanted to just finish off on the note of let me just see what's going on here. Okay. I wanted to finish off on the note of Aliyah. When you come to Israel, again, I was in the Golan for the Shabbat, the Sabbath here, and traveling the width and breadth of the country. When I go on these road trips, it is just so inspiring. And when I look at what is going on here with the new highways and the roads and the buildings and even new cities coming up, expansion of neighborhoods, new schools, new community centers, all of what's happening here, it is exploding in growth, Israel. And there's only a certain amount of time that you may be able to have the opportunity to pick up and bring all of the riches that God has blessed you with, whatever they are. You have a car, you sell it. That's a little bit of money. That's some riches there. An apartment, a home, even just old furniture and things. Whatever it is that you can come with to come home to your people. Because the future is here. We see anti-Semitism around the world, even on university campuses, university and college campuses, where freedom of thought is supposed to flourish and you can talk about different ideas, and yet you're stifled there. And if it's happening on college campuses by the academics themselves, where do you think the future is going to take you? There was a time when the gates were open and then they shut close and then it's too late. And when it's too late, it's too late. A lot of you thinking that things are going to stay the same. You can go when you want to. Airlines are going to fly. Visas are going to be given. Relations with countries are going to be good. You can come anytime you want, but it's not the case in history. We have seen it. So you have to catch the train before it leaves the station. If any of you want to make Aliyah and have questions, or you have a spouse that doesn't want to make Aliyah but you do, contact me.
Hey, this is Jake in Anchorage, Alaska, and I love listening to all the super interesting interviews and up-to-date information on what's happening in Israel.
Hello, this is Anna King, originally from London, now living in Israel. And what can I say? Israel News Talk Radio is my cup of tea.
My name is Bhaskar. I'm from India, and I love listening because you get to know the truth and wonderful voices from this lovely country.
Mom!
Okay, wait a minute.
Hi, this is Chava Dax, and I'm calling from the rolling hills of Maale Adumim, just north of Jerusalem. I always listen to Israel News Talk Radio to get all the latest news and commentary and to keep me up to date every day.
This is Sarah Dax from Maale Adumim, and I'm 12. I wish Israel News Talk Radio was boring so my mom wouldn't listen to it all the time. Mom!
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Where can you get the inside news on Israel? At Israel News Talk Radio, we're dedicated to sharing Israel's inside story with the world by providing our listeners with news on Israeli politics, current affairs, and Israeli Jewish culture. The Israel News Talk Radio homepage also provides you, the listener, with useful information at your fingertips, with scrolling news headlines, weather, currency exchange, Shabbat candlelighting times, and so much more. Our radio programming is always accessible and on demand. We operate absolutely free of charge for everyone, everywhere. If you love what we do, partner with us now by becoming an Israel News Talk Radio supporter. With your support, you'll be inscribed on our Israel News Talk Radio Wall of Fame. There's nothing like us in the world. Be part of something great. Israel News Talk Radio, straight talk from Israel.
News, opinion, and more. You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.